Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to the Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. This week, we continue coverage of the never-ending 2016 presidential election and the recounts and voter fraud with someone who it's my honor to present, Bev Harris. You all probably know who Bev is, but she's an American writer, activist, and founder of Black Box Voting, a national nonpartisan elections watchdog group. She helped to popularize the term black box voting while authoring a book of that title. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Bev Harris. Bev Harris of Black Box Voting. That's kind of hard to say. You can't say it too fast. It's an honor to finally have you on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Well, it's absolutely an honor to meet you, Cindy.
Yeah, it's great to finally talk to you in person. I've been following your work for years.
Well, that's actually a compliment. I didn't know that, but I've been following you. So mutual admiration society for sure.
Awesome. So we recently just had another fiasco in the United States, otherwise known as federal election. And I'd like, first of all, for you to tell us a little bit about yourself and why you started Black Box Voting. And, you know, a little bit of the background of that.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm a writer and have been for decades. And in early 2000, I just was going to do a quick little article on the voting systems in the United States. And the first thing I wanted to do was figure out who owned some of the companies. And the very first answer I got was, the wrong answer. I found out that a powerful Republican senator who later became Secretary of Defense owned the largest voting system, was an owner of the largest voting system in the United States. And I thought, well, that's kind of odd, especially since he had been elected on his own machines.
Right.
And that really got me intrigued. And over the course of the next year, I began to write a book about it and uncovered, it's like every question I asked, the question came up wrong. And by wrong, I mean, you expect that elections are supposed to be accountable to the public because, after all, we own them.
Right.
And it was very surprising to see kind of the amount of defensiveness among the, I guess you'd call it the elections industry, which is both private and public officials and companies, and an incredible amount of secrecy. It was just bizarre because before I had done writing about elections, I had done writing in the 90s about financial fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And these people reminded me of embezzlers, to tell you the truth. It was the same kind of attitudes you got, the same kind of dodging and weaving when you tried to track any kind of accountability for the numbers they were providing. And so I just really got interested in it. And over the course of the next 10 years, HBO made a documentary about my work and have done a lot of different studies. But in the course of that, I've evolved as well.
What's the
in
name
the beginning,
of that?
I thought.
What's the name of the HBO documentary?
The name of the documentary on HBO is Hacking Democracy.
Hacking Democracy, yes.
It was nominated for it's a 2006 documentary. It was nominated for an Emmy. And in it, we showed election officials literally covering up and throwing away election records, and we were finding counterfeit copies of them and so forth. But over the course of the last 10 years, when I mention I've evolved, this is what I mean. At first, I thought, well, there's some problems in this, and so if we simply bring those problems to the attention of legislators and so forth, they will want to solve those problems.
Mm-hmm.
Well, was I naive? They want it exactly the way it is. They want a system that's manipulatable and that's secret.
Same, you know, we had kind of the same trajectory when after my son was first killed. I just thought if I would go to Congress and pour my heart out, that they would see the error of their ways and end the wars. It goes a lot deeper than that, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, it was just, and by the way, you know, I'm so sorry about your son. You know, I have a son by the same name, actually.
Kate,
Just my
aww.
heart went out to you.
Aww.
But, you know, yeah, it's been quite an awakening. It's quite clear, actually, that not at first I thought, well, theoretically, people could be doing things with elections and they could be tampering with them and it might be happening sporadically here and there. There's absolutely no doubt. I mean, and what's odd is, you know, I've actually caught them in the act, actually videotaped people in the act of tampering with elections. And there's nobody to investigate and nobody to enforce. And when you start going down that rabbit hole, you know, you go to the Secretary of State and they say, well, we have no enforcement power. That would be the Attorney General. And you go to the Attorney General and they say, well, we have no investigative power. That would be the Secretary of State. And if you go to the local prosecutor, he says, well, my job is to represent the election official, so I have a conflict of interest. You can't find anybody to even investigate unless it comes through a very narrow portal of violating specific civil rights for persons who are of disadvantaged populations.
Right.
That's the only way, and then you can bring in federal under equal protection laws. But most of the election tampering, even when witnessed, simply does not get, absolutely nothing is done.
Well, so I did mention our recent fiasco on November 8th, and I listened to some snippets or interviews with you, read some of the things that you have written. Apparently, you and I both thought that Clinton was going to win. Now, I thought she was going to win not just because of the compromised voting machines, but also she had every institution behind her, the media, Wall Street, the Pentagon, Israel, she had like she was their candidate. She was the candidate of the Democratic establishment. There was much evidence that the primaries were rigged in her favor, and so I thought that she was going to win. And you, I heard you say on one interview that even if she loses, she's going to win. So what do you think happened?
Yeah, that was a shocker because, you know, she simply because she had usually with the Republicans running against the Democrats, they both have an elite establishment behind them. And in this case, it wasn't like that, where you had an outsider candidate and then you had an insider, and the insider had reports from some people in both parties. So it was really stunning. The loss was really stunning. And I think it will be a while before we really unravel what happened. One of the things that I found is on election night, it's all, oh, everything's fine, you know, da-da-da, here's the result. And then things start to unravel over the next weeks and months where you start to find all the abnormalities and all the things that didn't actually add up. And, you know, it looks to me, it's, and in fact, I guess I don't know why I'd be surprised by this, but it looks to me like there was actually cross tampering going on. And, you know, it's so interesting. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, is doing recounts in these different states. Initially got pushback from both sides, you know, and then finally, when it became apparent that she had raised the money and was going ahead, the Clinton campaign said, well, we'll send our lawyers, but we don't think there's anything there. And I thought, well, that's just bizarre. Because on election night, I was watching, and there was places which were less than 0.5%. I mean, that's usually an automatic recount, and nobody was breathing a word about recount at the time. And I thought, well, that's really strange. How do you have, like, New Hampshire at one point was separated by only 96 votes. Why would you not recount? You know, it was just strange. But so it seems that neither party really wanted to look at it at all, which doesn't make any sense. If there's nothing wrong with the results, there's going to be nothing wrong with the recount.
Well, we have, I was going to ask you about what you thought about the Jill Stein's energy for the recount in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And
right, right.
I read an article that you wrote or an interview that you did that you said that if there is fraud or tampering, it's usually an inside job. The problem I have with Stein's recounts is that, like, she's not counting recounting New Hampshire, which was very close.
Right.
But Clinton won.
Or Nevada.
And, or Nevada or North Carolina, where they don't even count green votes, you know? And so, but her complaints smack of Clinton, Russophobia. You know, the Russians hacked the voting machines. There's nothing really about
which
she's,
was just,
but she's also saying.
Although I will say this,
go ahead.
New Hampshire would not allow her to recount.
Okay.
They changed the law in New Hampshire in 2008 after Dennis Kucinich did a recount, and they made it much more difficult. So candidates cannot recount if they get small percentage of the vote as she did.
Right.
Hillary would have been able to recount New Hampshire, but they would not have allowed Jill Stein to. And the same may be true, well, same certainly true of Florida. And but it wasn't true of Nevada. And, you know, Clinton won Nevada. Now there's another candidate who's recounting Nevada now, Rocky De La Fuente.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a little bit more the real deal in terms of saying, I just want to find out what happened. He was on the presidential slate in 40 states, and he was also a primary candidate, and he had a lot of weird things happen to him when he was trying to qualify for the primary. So he's recounting Nevada now, although that here's the problem with recounts. If they have done something to tamper with the results, they're not, and if they're willing to hand count the ballots, a lot of the places, if there even are ballots, they still refuse to hand count them and just put them through the machine again.
Right.
But in those cases, the places that have hand counts of paper ballots, if they have tampered, because it is an inside job typically, the same insiders have access to the ballots.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not going to hand over, you know, 2 or 3 weeks after the fact, a bunch of ballots that prove that they're guilty. You know, it's just not going to happen. So the whole focus, or a large amount of the focus on recounts, needs to be on chain of custody of the ballots to see who was in those ballot rooms and when, and is there surveillance tape? Because they will adjust the ballots to match if they've tampered with it, because the same people who tamper are the people who have access to the ballots. But they do tend to leave a trail of breadcrumbs. And when we looked at a recount in New Hampshire in 2008, which was the Hillary Clinton versus Obama one. Clinton had won by a very improbable margin in that particular one. And we did catch them tampering with the recount ballots. They were actually pretty, we caught them in the act. I mean, they actually had ink solvent at one point, and they were in there erasing the ink marks, and we videotaped it. Yeah, and we videotaped it. It was like, wow. And I interviewed a state legislator, and I said, well, how do you reconcile the fact that, you know, and she said, well, you know, a deal sometimes has to be made. And the nature of elections is just tawdry in America. It's much worse than it is in some place like Germany. Germany has outlawed electronic counting of the vote unless people can come up with a way that makes the public be able to see and authenticate the original count.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the nuts and bolts. It's like the public has got to be able to see and authenticate the count. If we can't, then we might as well throw it out the window. We have absolutely no idea what it is. And even with a recount, we're still, in most cases, going to have no idea what that count was supposed to be.
Well, it must, like, really irk you as much as it irks me to say, you know, that the U.S. government, they'll say, oh, we're going to go and we're going to bomb Iraq because we're going to bring democracy to Iraq. When we don't we only have, like, rhetorical democracy here in the United States.
Right, right. It's it's like they're in the movie Hacking Democracy. There's this wonderful activist named Susan Pinchon, and she says it's like we're one country pretending to be another, and that's kind of where we're at this point.
Yeah, it's a good analogy.
And I'll tell you what's really interesting is we have been able to find some solutions that are extremely easy to implement, don't cost any money, and are already available. And this here's what it is. Humboldt County, California, what pioneered this, and they said, "I'll tell you what, let's just get an off-the-shelf document scanner from Office Depot, and besides putting our ballots through the voting machines, let's just scan them all and let everybody put them all on the web for everybody to see." Uh-huh. Right? They're anonymous. What's wrong with that? And they did that. Of course, the first thing they did that the citizens looked at them and found out that the voting machines had miscounted. But we thought, well, this is a nifty idea. We could have all the election officials just scan them. And in fact, the modern voting machines automatically create scans of right. every ballot. So let's just get those as a public record. Well, now that's when it really gets informative. They, election officials, when you say, we would like to have a copy of all those pictures of ballots that your machine automatically creates, they say things like, we destroy those every day. That, I'm not kidding, that's what they said in Arizona and Colorado. Or, it's against the law for anybody to look at a ballot ever, even in freedom of information. So it's when you start seeing that, that's classic cover-up.
Right.
I mean, you might as well be driving down the freeway in a white Bronco, you know, $10,000 in the glove compartment, saying, oh, no, nothing to see here. Uh-huh. You know, we're hiding all the evidence. So when you see stuff like that, you know they're tampering. I mean, it's a simple explanation. They're doing something. They don't want you to see the evidence. But there actually are simple explanations. And so at this point, the fight has kind of migrated into something kind of optimistic, where a lot of reporters and citizens are, and all kinds of folks are getting behind the idea of release all those pictures right away on election night of the ballots, because they're already there. And then peg them to the real ballots with serial number or something so that we can go and look at the real ballot and make sure it's the same thing if we want, using freedom of information laws. It doesn't cost anybody anything to do that, and we can already do it. And then start making a list of the people who are resisting this and hold them up for public ridicule, frankly. You know, these are people who don't want anybody to see how the elections work. Why? Doesn't cost anything, it's already there. So I think this is a whole new wrinkle in what's going on, because we're at last able to say, look, there are solutions to this. If you want us to be able to know that our elections are fair, this is how you can do it. And so we'll see. Some states have agreed. Wisconsin is letting people look at the ballots and ballot images. So is Florida now. So is Michigan now. So these places in Wisconsin with the recount who are saying, we're going to refuse to hand count, the citizens are like, well, that's fine. We're just going to hang around and we're going to do it under your freedom of information law and we're going to look at the ballots anyway. And that's where we start to get real traction, I think, towards solutions.
Do you think that the Russians hacked these elections, these voting machines, to make Trump win?
No. No, I don't think they did. No, I think, I know it because one of the things I did when I first realized how much resistance there was, and people were calling me a conspiracy theorist and all this stuff, and I knew I was right. And so I went to Kentucky and started looking at local elections. Why? Because everybody was perfectly willing to believe that in Kentucky they might rig elections. I don't know why, but you know, they wanted to think of them as, you know, some sort of hillbillies or something. It's no different in Kentucky than anywhere else. But right. Indeed, you know, I uncovered some elections and some people actually got indicted for rigging the elections, Clay County, Kentucky, and so forth. So then expanding that out. But so I basically found that the election tampering mechanisms that are kind of built into a lot of the voting system software were kind of put in there because because a lot of the locals want to be able to control their own elections for reasons of money, basically. Mm-hmm. You've got a stadium being built, or you've got some huge bond issue going through, or there's a corrupt local sheriff. And So what has, you know, the vendors, and I've even had some of the vendors tell me this, they have a tough time selling election equipment unless it is tamperable.
Unless there's a back door.
Yes, because they won't buy it. They'll buy the other guys who have the back door. So when you look at it that way, it's like, well, wait a minute. The infrastructure is already there to tamper with the presidential. You don't need the Russians. And if you're, it just always sounded to me like propaganda. You know, oh, the Russians are going to come in. What was that all about? It was just all of a sudden,
The Russians hacked into Hillary Clinton's campaign's email because we don't want to look at what those emails actually said because, you know, that reveals such corrupt, dirty dealings, you know, with the Clinton campaign. And I, you know, my mm-hmm. listeners know I'm not a Trump supporter either, but, you know, we have to highlight these discrepancies and these hypocrisies if we want any change.
Exactly. You know, we really have to, I think we've gotten a lot of progress in this last election. And I was not a Trump supporter, but I think he did some things that were valuable in calling attention to, you know, when he would say the election is rigged, he may not have known what he was talking about.
Right.
But nobody would even talk about it before that, and nobody would even explore the questions involved. They still, you know, the mainstream media, that's when, actually, it was after that the mainstream media started saying, it's the Russians, it's the Russians, it's the Russians, which to me was just saying, don't look at the insiders, don't look at the insiders.
Well, it's also like Trump, like, defeated the Clinton-Bush reign of terror, I should say. And so, I mean, it was valuable that he was highlighting these things, I think. But I had another point that I was going to make, but I forgot. Anyway, one thing before we're over that I'd like you to talk about that I find very fascinating is what you call fraction magic.
Yeah, you know, for a long time, we were trying to figure out the easiest way and how it could really be done. And a fellow in Memphis, Tennessee, really cracked the code for that. And it was so simple. And basically, he knew, because he had a combination of different skills. He had a combination of accounting expertise. And book counting is accounting. It's that same type of technology. And he had political acumen. So he understood the demographics and what you have to do in order to make it politically plausible. And he had database acumen. And he said, you know, what you have to do, absolutely have to, is it has to be done on the precinct level, because results are reported on the precinct level. In Memphis, it's one of those cities where the inner city is all black Democrat and the outer city is mostly white Republican. You cannot just flip votes. It's going to look ridiculous to say, oh, well, we just flipped them all and, oh, suddenly all the black Democrats voted for white Republicans. You know, it just wouldn't be plausible. What you have to do is parse it out by precinct and make it look somewhat plausible. And he knew that. It's absolutely necessary not to do that. And you also can never know how many people are going to show up to vote. So if you just stack the deck and say, I'm going to preload votes into the voting machine, that's not going to work, because what if not that many people show up? You're going to look stupid. So what you have to do is be able to say by percent, I'm going to give in this precinct, this candidate is going to get this percent, and in this precinct, he's going to get that percent. But he knew that if you do that, it's going to create votes. The votes themselves are going to turn into fractions. And it's like if you have 100 votes, 100 voters show up, and you say, I want this guy to get 25%, that's fine, that's 25 votes. But if 99 voters show up, you've got a vote that's going to have a fraction on the end of it, a decimal on the end of it, because it's not going to divide evenly into 100. And so he knew that the system, the software, would have to be designed to handle votes that had turned into fractions if they were using that kind of, he called it an allocation process. That's what the accounting term is. And he was astounded when he looked at the software and the first thing he saw was instructions to treat all votes as decimals. And so, in other words, none of the votes are treated as whole numbers. They're all decimalized. there's no legitimate reason to do that in general elections. And so he then did a proof of concept to see, okay, let me see if I can completely change all the votes exactly as I want and have total control over it in every precinct, in every voting style. And literally, he took a place with over 200 precincts and three different voting styles and manipulated every single one of them in 19 seconds. And it was so precise. You can literally spell words with your percentages. Like if A is number one because it's the first letter in the alphabet and H is number eight because it's the eight, you could put like ha ha ha, H-A-H-A-H-A, you know, just by going 8-1-8-1-8-1, I want 81.81% of the votes. It would be that precise where exactly that percentage of votes would show up for the guy. And then the software also automatically rounds it off. It creates decimals in the votes, and then it rounds it off, so you can't tell the decimals are there.
Is this actually happening?
So, it certainly seems to be. Because one of the symptoms that happens if you don't use it skillfully is, you know, if you have 1.25 votes, and you have that's going to round off to 1, because it's going to round down. But if you have 4 of those, it's going to round up, and you're going to get these little, they're called one-off errors, where they kind of accumulate, the debris accumulates.
Uh-huh.
And we have found elections which have they have one-off errors. In fact, one or two off, you know, where you'll have, for example, for simple numbers, if you have 10 voters and there should be 10 votes.
Mm-hmm.
There should not be 11 votes and 10 voters. When you start seeing that it's off by one in a number of different races, that's an actual symptom of the fraction magic being used. And another symptom is when the voting machine spit out this little cash register-like tape that has the results on it.
Right.
And if you can get a hold of that and compare it, it's not going to match because this fraction magic is done centrally at the master computer that controls all the voting machines. And he found 18 voting machine tape results that did not match what the central tabulator had spit out. So there again. And another symptom was sometimes you'll watch election results come in and it'll say like we have 100 precincts in and the candidate is at X percent and then more precincts come in and suddenly the candidate has less votes. Now, that can't happen. You can't have more precincts come in and he's got less votes. And this is fairly frequently observed. Well, that can happen when you have fraction magic because it's capping the percent and it's saying, look, that person's vote percent is never going to go above this amount. So more votes are coming in. I got to knock some off, you know. And so that is a symptom. So the symptoms are pretty strong that it is being used in various elections. Interestingly, the election we found about 21 of these roundoff errors in one election, and it was all judicial races and criminal justice system races.
Mm.
Interesting, huh?
Very interesting.
It's not, people always think about president, but it's not all about the president. It's about control.
Right, exactly. They're so treacherous. What evil geniuses, huh? I remember I used to work at polling place, and we would put all our ballots in a box, and then we'd take them to, the county to count and stuff like that. And when my friend Matt Gonzalez was running for mayor in San Francisco, he narrowly lost to Gavin Newsom, which caused a recount. But during the recount, couple days after the election, they found several of those boxes floating in the bay. You know, so there's always been ways to tamper with elections, haven't there?
Yes. Yeah. And you know, that's the thing. A lot of people will say, oh, there's a modem in the voting machine. What do you think that means? The truth is there's 50 ways to do it or 150, you know, and it doesn't matter what system you use. Just like passing a law against crime doesn't make crime go away. Mm-hmm. You know, you're never going to get a system that is 100% secure from all tampering. What you have to do instead is make it 100% transparent immediately,
right,
so that anybody can see and you're highly likely to get caught. And, you know, the thing that we were talking about, we saw the photographic images on the web right away, you know, right as they're scanned on election night, and then peg them to the real ballots. It wouldn't matter if you're the Russians or you're a local fixer. You're not going to get by with it if you do that kind of thing. So I think at this stage, we're like, how much are they going to resist a simple method that will give absolute transparency that places have already implemented and has worked, you know? And that's, and the people who resist it the most and the locations who resist it the most are basically mapping themselves out as the most likely to be corrupt.
Exactly. Well, Bev Harris, we're out of time. It's been a very interesting conversation for me. So how can my listeners get more involved if they want to be more involved in making sure that our votes are actually counted properly?
You know, some of the best things to do depends which state, because the different states have different situations. Mm-hmm. My email is right there on the website, and I have a really big network of folks that I collaborate with in different states. And usually when people email me and want to get involved, then I point them to somebody in their location, because it's
perfect.
It's best addressed state by state.
Yes.
Because each state literally has a different thing. And tremendous strides have been made. I'm just so impressed with the public and how they have been able to, using their individual creative skills and motivations, get amazing things done. We're not there yet, but we actually can see a light at the end of the tunnel now. And it's going to be interesting, because one of the weak areas they have is they're still pretending that elections are real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of boxing them into a corner, and we'll see what happens next. But this is definitely a situation where we need the public putting their shoulder to the wall.
Well, this is another big flaw in the electoral system here in the United States for federal elections. Every state has different rules, different regulations, different ways to vote. I think at least for federal elections, it should be standardized.
Some things about it are, the problem I have with that is the federal guys get the most money thrown at them, and the bills that come out of Congress, in fact, all these voting machines and the paper trail came from a federal bill.
Mm-hmm.
It was, in a way, you're right, but it was sort of the only defense we've had against some of the worst federal legislation is the states who held out against it. We need good federal legislation.
Right.
At this point, because
honestly,
it's so broken.
We need a different government, yeah. Honestly. And so,
well, yeah.
So
yeah.
We have,
I mean,
to do,
it's so many layers, isn't it? It really is.
Whatever we can to keep our noses above the water until that happens.
Yes. Well, Cindy, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. I just really hold you in the highest regard.
Definitely, Bev, and you too. And keep up the good work and take care of all those little babies.
I will. It's great fun.
Okay. I'll send you the link to this interview as soon as we have it up, probably by Thursday or Friday.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, have a great week, and thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, Bev Harris.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
That's the Soapbox for this week. As always, I hope you were inspired and informed and want to go to Bev Harris's website and go to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox to look at all the links. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, who is in Cuba this week. So John Gold is his replacement. So I'd like to thank John Gold. I'd like to thank Bev for being on the show and for all her work and taking time out to be on the show. She has some exciting but time-consuming personal things happening in her life right now. I'd like to thank you for listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to The Soapbox. Peace out for now.